new me if I start murdering people. Depending on if you're left.
And when I get nervous, I walk. And usually I speak too quickly. So if you don't understand, you can just keep it to yourself and pretend you did.
I'd be very, very careful who you talk to about that, because the person who wrote that is dangerous.
Welcome to the Fitness is Fucked podcast. I'm Michael Blevins, joined by my colleague, Keegan Dillon. Is that official enough?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay. How did we, what were we talking about the other day that became actually a bigger subject than we can?
I started asking you questions about FRC.
Ah, right.
And trying to overlay my thoughts with FRC, and you were explaining it to me better than I understood it.
Okay. But there was like a general concept there that I think that was the more important thing that I saw.
Yeah, I was thinking, you started talking about the internal strength model. I started talking about how I view like squatting, benching, deadlifting movements in the gym now. And it's kind of the same concept.
Mouth noises.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mouth noises is kind of what kicked it off into, yeah, I don't need these things. I don't think we do. Yeah, mouth noises let me know, like, oh, yeah, that's a great subject. And you kind of had a thing. What was your issue when Spina said something about that?
So I was understanding mouth noises as, like, it sounded like he was moderately derogatory towards exercising with weights, in a sense, like mm-hmm. a deadlift, by just saying a deadlift is just a mouth noise. But I misunderstood it mm-hmm. from the standpoint of, I assume that people were thinking about deadlift the same way like a coach or I would think about deadlift, but it's more just like bars on the ground, I'm standing up, bars back on the ground.
Yeah.
Without paying attention to like internally holding the correct positions, having the correct tension, keeping the correct posture, technique, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And then you kind of explained further about like that's actually what he's talking about. Just like missed that concept.
Well, and I think you missed it for a fair point, because most people when they look into FRC they see nothing but like arrogant people.
Yeah.
The arrogance comes, do you know why I'm okay with it? Because I recognize it in Christian denominations. This sounds like a really far stretch, but it's really not. So you'll know this immediately. In fact, everybody will have heard this at some point. So but for the you're celebrating Christmas, you love Jesus, and you're like, oh, I love Christmas and I love the whole festivities, and somebody's like, you know, Jesus's birthday was not in December. It's that's FRC. They have a truth.
Yep.
And they also know that the general public doesn't know the truth, but they keep exerting this really like arrogant like air about it, as opposed to like, oh, do you know what's crazy? They just have to, I think they just get frustrated over time, because people go, oh, you know, I make my back strong, I deadlift, and both me and you go, oh, Jesus. That's like being like, I celebrate Christmas, I'm a Christian, and you're like, oh, fuck. Like, it's the same thing. You're just like, we've over time correlated so many things to a word that the word loses meaning. It loses all of its meaning.
Right.
That's what I think he's talking about when he says mouth noises. And I would say this, like, because when you say, hey, how much do you squat? And I go, 1,000 pounds. And you go, I think we're talking about different things.
Right.
And then you see my squat.
That's a good point.
Right. And,
yeah.
And then we go, oh, yeah, yeah. You like did the first part of it. Maybe. I mean, if I put 1,000 pounds on my back, I would fucking die. But also like in the same, there's a lot of people out there that are like, oh, 405 squat. And you're like, I've seen you walk. Like, I don't think that's possible. Like, I just don't, like, I can't see the mechanics. So we must be talking about something different. So the general term squat or deadlift doesn't describe anything on the internal contract, like what you would recognize right. as doing something appropriate or correct. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That makes so much more sense now than before it. Honestly, I started to be like, oh, it's just a little dude that hates strong guys.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, it's probably some of that too.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of like, I can't speak for it. I maybe knowingly ignore a lot of the stuff that bothers a lot of people about FRC. What bothers me is that they're trying to be this like very science derived kind of like they're trying to fit the strength and conditioning model. Even their like font packages and their like their graphic design drives me fucking crazy because it's trying to like look like the, you know, ASPI or
like a textbook almost.
Exactly. Yeah, trying to be very like fundamental. Yeah. With like, and I get what they're doing. They're trying to appear as if like, no, we're the real thing. We're the real science behind training. I look at that like, dude, whatever. Like, good information, but I also see where it's kind of I don't think it's limited, because I do think that what they're onto is like fundamentally true. And I think once you learn how to express it, so if we, maybe we could go back and talk about like your so it's FRC, but it's also the stuff that you're messing with right now too, because I think when you rearrange, when you kind of like reevaluate your foundation about how you think of things, you kind of have to deconstruct everything. And that process is, it's time consuming.
Yeah. And I think especially with the torn calf, that's kind of where I was at. I'm still there a bit, trying to like figure out how to tie together. And they're not synonymous, or they're not different by any means. They are synonymous, like arthrokinematics and biomechanics. And they work in harmony, I think, together, for lack of a better word, but people miss that. Like, nobody talks about joints in a gym ever.
No.
Right? And I think that even goes to say, like, doing movement, not FRC derived, but just doing anything.
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about, like, the correct way to get it. Or if, like, I feel like there's this inherent good enough, and good enough over time becomes all of the issues people end up having. Yeah. And I've heard it, you've probably heard it hundreds of times, and I have too, and I've experienced it where you're like, I'm fine. 10 years later, back, hip, shoulder, something's just like this nagging injury or nagging problem. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't get it. Like, I've been fine for 10 years, and now like I haven't done anything different. And you're like, that's actually the problem.
Yeah.
It's because you've been developing
anything different.
The compensations and accommodations from doing things incorrectly and probably not exploring ranges of motion and just being like, cool, the bar went from my shoulders to overhead, therefore I shoulder press, but your rib cage is sticking up to the ceiling, your lumbar is extended, and then all of a sudden you're like, I tweaked my back on a shoulder press, and then everything you do tweaks your back. Because you've been finding, mobility throughout your lumbar to do everything.
So this is totally, and for the longest time, so maybe this is a good this is a good entry point into this problem, because for the longest time I kept hearing people say, oh, you got hurt because your technique sucks. And in my experience, that is rarely why somebody gets hurt. In fact, kind of the weirder, shittier positions that people pull, they're never going to be able to express that energy system efficiently or optimally.
Right.
But they rarely get hurt when technique is wrong. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just mine. I've trained a lot of people, but I've never seen a valgus knee blow out in a squat, because a valgus knee can't support the weight that would do that.
Right, because your movement's deficient, it limits the amount of weight or power or anything you can put into the movement.
But I've gotten hurt with very good technique a lot of times, and that to me at first registered, as, okay, my technique was incorrect, but something is up where I'm still getting hurt. And it was like what I was calling an overcontraction, right? And what I meant by that, it seems like things are pulling the system out of balance. So what I couldn't identify for a really long time was that I would get hurt back squatting and I would get hurt front squatting because I had deficiencies that I masked by trying to make other things even stronger to mask them, but it threw the scale way off, which for 10 years was fine. And then it started to really flip the other side. So like in my snatch, very technical, had a pretty good position until I broke my elbow, and then it was kind of asymmetrical. But before that, it was like beautiful looking. Now it was kind of skewampus, and I always imagined that would eventually, don't even give me that shit, that's a word. It was kind of unsymmetrical, unbalanced. And I knew that would eventually catch up with me, but I didn't know how. And then eventually, like, I would get like a back tweak. And then because of the back tweak, I would notice my shoulder mobility would be tight because it was making up for the back tweak. And then my shoulder would start getting tweaked, and then my back would be worse. It was like a cascading effect. And I go, that's not a technical issue, though. That is a compensation issue, kind of like how you described. So the model now that I look like is like when people are like, you got to have proper technique. They actually don't know what they're talking about. Because proper technique, over time amplified, still accommodates the system to be over-reliant on one thing, as opposed to balancing it by training the complementary groups of like muscle structure or whatever we're talking about, at least in the most basic framework. And that's where I moved up to thinking. And then I was still on the muscles though. I was still thinking like, oh, you just like, it's architecture. So if you pull something too far one way, it pulls this off balance. And then now I have stress points on the skeletal structure.
Right.
I think I'm away from that now, but I'm still developing like the real concept, which I think we're getting closer to, of understanding that once you train the joint space, which would be what FRC introduced to this idea. And for those that don't know, functional range conditioning, kind of like what they identified was that, you know, if we agree that the brain is controlling the musculature and the connective tissue, then we decide that it's basically your movement patterns are basically a blend of optimized or proactive neuronal reactions. So the more neurons that respond, the more control you have. And that's what we would see in strength graphs. When you like increase your strength potential, you're increasing the amount of neurons that are firing inside the muscle belly. Well, they took that farther and they go, but when we look at neurons, the density of neurons is more in the joint than it is in the muscle. And that's why they wanted to train the joint, because although we can't feel it, that's literally where a lot of the sensory information comes by for the joint to coordinate how muscle structure works around the joint. So in their theory, as we train tissue, especially when we get it to compensate by overworking it through many, many repetitions in the same planes and don't compensate it in other planes or balance out the system. So by getting a big deadlift, I'm basically going, I'm moving this way with this kind of force. But they're saying because you rarely activate, you might support it with accessory exercises, but those accessory exercises are thought of less than, and therefore the expression is never equal to what you can do in a deadlift. And because it's unequal, the tissue responds to the expression of the contraction rate. And if the contraction rate is only maximal in one way and not maximal in the other way, you are always going to accommodate the system to be poorer and poorer and then unbalanced. Well, as the system compensates, the joint space collapses and then it aggravates or exponentially changes how the muscle structure can work, because now with the sensory information of pain or impingement or something like that, you're changing how the muscle can actually work, and it now you have a limited range of motion. Now you have a limited range of motion because you've sent the signal to your brain that you want to do this movement, and over time that is good and efficient. And then once you get a kind of a peak expression of that, it starts to degrade. And that's what I felt in a snatch. Now, where that goes now is like, well, if I back up, and I think this is what we're talking about this morning, which is really interesting, you go, oh, okay, there's a structural point that if I don't identify or be sensitive to how my muscles and connective tissue are working in conjunction with that structure, then I'm going to fall prey to some of these like deleterious effects from training, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think on that note, like especially the like discussing accessory movements, like people don't do them correctly, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's always how heavy can I go? Like they look at getting better is just adding weight, as yeah. opposed to getting better by moving better and then adding weight.
I want to clarify when you say not doing it correctly, because people will take that to mean that they're not doing it technically. But I think to clarify what you're talking about, they're not engaging the tissue correctly. Right. They're compensating, even though like in the example that we used today, the lat pull down, the bar is doing, it's taking the same line.
You're doing the mouth noise.
Yes.
To go back to that.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'm not engaging my lat correctly. I'm taking it over with my scap. And as soon as you feel the real thing, you go, oh, I have like almost no control over my lat.
Right.
Which means technically I was doing it correctly because the bar went from A to B. Just like if I snatch, kind of who cares who how it gets there. If you snatch a very heavy weight, if it got to the top and you stand it up, you get all the white flags or whatever, and then you win. But in this case, you're not winning because you're what you're looking to do with training is learning how to control your tissue correctly. Now, that is different for everybody. So technique will vary, and what's considered correct should be based off of what you're talking about, which is, are you activating correctly?
Yeah. And I think even that, like if you can't find your lat in a lat pull down, you probably can't find them when you're pulling anything off the ground. So the entire supportive structure of your spine, like probably the biggest supporter of your spine as far as like keeping it together is not engaged.
Correct. Yeah. And I would go one further because I used to be like talking about like putting things on your skeletal structure because that is like a rigid structure. I've come to kind of understand that that is actually less optimal.
I think so.
You shut off the supportive musculature
right.
that is required for movement.
A good example, and I don't know if this will translate via words, but we're talking about prone hamstring curls. Everybody like laying on your belly, the machine that's, you know, kind of angled so your legs come down. There's a pad that your like Achilles kind of sits on. And then everybody either lifts and moves their pelvis as the hamstring curl. So if you're thinking legs straight, you do the hamstring curl and your pelvis moves this way. The muscle, aka the hamstring, is moving from your pelvis to where it inserts at the bottom underneath what, like around the knee? So now instead of like keeping tension in the muscle belly, you're just moving on structure from insertion to origin the whole time. And the muscle's not actually creating tension because you're not getting length or being able to shorten it appropriately.
Yeah.
So you're now missing parts of that contraction, which probably isn't an issue until you've done hamstring curls for 10 years. And then you blow a hamstring trying to do like a box jump or a deadlift or an RDL. And you don't know why, but it's because you have more tissue, muscle tissue specifically, but I think connective tissue as well, that didn't get like the adequate level of strength within that movement because you've only been moving it half the distance as opposed to the full thing.
And you never stressed it how you think you were stressing it. And you made a really good point today that I thought it's going to take me probably a year to understand it. But when you take something to failure, you have to identify the exact tissue that you're talking about, because when your brain is trying to complete a task, and this is to come back to the quote of mouth noise, your body does not care what a squat is. You've told it to get low to the ground with heavy weight and to stand up with it. And so it's just trying to do what you request, bar nothing else. But if I was going to squat and I wanted to train the tissue required for a big squat or something like that, I would want to really identify what the limitation is. Now, given somebody's mobility or range limitations, most people cannot squat so that it is a leg exercise. It's most often a low back exercise because that is where the fulcrum and the ability of the athlete is contingent on. And that's why a lot of people that have a problem with the back squat, and I've been this person before, identify it as problematic because I don't know how to get people to activate their, I know how to, but I don't know how to adequately express that I need you to feel this in very specific spots in the legs without, I don't know, isolating.
Yeah.
And so as a compound movement, as I was saying, it is like, this is probably the awesome part of bodybuilding and also the complete deficit of it, is that it introduced the idea of controlling the tissue very specifically. Because if you want your lats to grow, or I want my medial delt to grow, I really have to control that part of my body.
Yeah.
Like precisely. Because otherwise, the truth is you won't grow what you can't activate, right? The muscle tissue needs a signal in order to respond and compensate for that. The part where that gets kind of ruined is we've built all of these machines and pathways where people can grow kind of by accident. Now you take that isolation training methodology and you get fairly robust doing it. Now, if you're doing it incorrectly, as you describe, I would say that you end up converting that into compound movement and dynamic compound movement, and you're exacerbating all of the deficiencies of you being unable to control tissue specifically.
Yeah.
And that's what we're really talking about when we're talking about strength training.
So this will make sense to you, I think. Nobody listening to this probably knows who Matt is, but Matt at the 9 a.m., he has a massive upper back, like shockingly large.
Yeah.
But you go like an inch below his scaps and he's got nothing. And today was the first day I worked with him on lat pulldowns. He was like, dude, I've never felt my lats before. And I'm like, I can see that.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't, like, his lats don't go from like armpit down to like almost his waist. They like stop like right underneath his armpit.
Yeah.
Because everything he does is compensated through the mid back.
And taking the traps.
So he's got huge traps and like upper mid-ish back is gigantic.
Yeah, pretty good rear delts too.
Yeah, and then, but everything below that doesn't exist. Yeah. And that's most people in a bodybuilding gym. Mm-hmm. Because you're just, A, people misunderstand progressive overload, which is not a term I think I enjoy that much anymore. I've become a bigger fan of progressive overstimulation.
Ooh.
Because there's more ways to change the stimulus than just adding weight. Right? You can change center of mass, you can change an angle, change a pull.
By describing it as load, you're just saying weight.
Right. So when you say overload, people go, oh, I need more weight.
Yeah, I like that.
But like, overstimulus might be maybe you did 8 reps of dumbbell rows with 50s and the last two look like shit. If you do it next week and the last two look better, you could argue that's a better stimulus or you're growing.
Yes.
Or you add 2 reps, or you know, maybe you did it totally supported on a bench. Now you only like put your hand on the dumbbell rack and do it. So now your spine's got to stabilize more because you're not as externally stabilized, or you go into like a bird dog row, or I mean, you could get stupid with it, but I think those little increments of adding stimulus help more than the idea of just adding more load.
So what are your concepts of adding stimulus? I mean, I have mine, but I kind of want to hear, like, if load is one of them, obviously, other ones?
So thinking about, like, a box step up, right? Mm-hmm. You can change the way, like, and I've been trying to work on this with your mom because her pelvis doesn't move at all, right?
Man, people are going to take that so far. They're like, wait, was that a sick burn?
I would be more egregious with those jokes, but I love your mom.
Thanks, Pam.
So like her hip doesn't translate left to right when she moves. She has what's called crossover gait syndrome, I believe. Mm-hmm. So like if you're doing a box step up to change your center of mass for her, I'll put the dumbbell in the opposite hand of the working leg to get the hip to move laterally so she can stand up, where if I had the dumbbell in her other hand, it wouldn't do it as much. Because she'd be more stabilized on that side.
Right.
So in that regard, that's changing her center of mass, so she has to compensate through that pelvic translation to try to loosen that up.
So let me like clarify before you keep going with it. Don't lose your track of thought. That is what they mean by mouth noise, by saying step up. But what you've identified is going beyond the mouth noise and trying to describe exactly where somebody needs to exert control in order to express a step up. If you just say, how did you get strong? And you're like, step up. How did Pam fix her hip? Like, step ups. And then somebody
context
tries
is lost to, completely.
Exactly. You homogenize it. And that's what they're really against, is homogenization of training, because training is very specific to the person who needs it.
Yeah. And like, just to go down that line of thought, and you know, your mom won't probably get to the end goal, but not end goal, but the end of this thought. Mm-hmm. You know, now you add 2 dumbbells.
Yes.
So now you have more weight. She's got to stabilize a little more, especially on 1 foot. Or, you know, then you could go front rack, back rack. You could hold a D-ball. Mm-hmm. Like, all those things are changing your center of mass. So your body has to accommodate for that. But you have to be able to pay attention, make sure you're not accommodating in a way that's compensating.
Yeah.
You're moving correctly and accommodating that way, but you're not, or you're, what was the word I just used? You're not compensating.
Yeah. I think something really interesting about that, if people don't understand, and they should, is it doesn't matter who you are as a person, you should kind of look up the body types that have uncentered proportion. And what I mean by that is, like, if you look at how somebody holds themselves, your body is always trying to find center equilibrium, always, 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 always. Now, whatever that means, if I have limited shoulder mobility, that means I start to roll in and become kyphotic, and therefore it changes the anterior and posterior tilt of the hip in order to drive that center line. So to correct somebody's walking sometimes, or to correct, somebody's back problems sometimes has to do with changing how they walk.
Yeah.
Because the internal external rotation of the hip can sometimes change the relationship of the pelvic tilt, and that will change the relationship to the or alleviation of the kyphosis in a shoulder. So you're like, and there's a ton of different angles you can see people, but everybody kind of sees the Mr. Burns look.
Yeah.
Like, I think modern
humans... It's very prevalent these days.
Yeah, and it's sitting. I think it's a lack of internal rotation of the hip. It's a huge feature of not enough flexion of the shoulder, not enough extension of the shoulder, and not enough internal rotation of the shoulder. Once that happens, once you compensate into that, now I have to find a new center line.
Yep.
That isn't corrected by any amount of deadlifts, any amount of generic mouth noises will not fix that problem because it is very specific to the person. And then I would hate to add this layer on top of it to like tell people that it's like kind of demonstrate how hopeless it is. That relationship to your hips and your shoulders and your spine shape changes, right? Lordosis, all of that stuff, that changes your diaphragm. Your diaphragm changes the amount that you breathe in and how you're comfortable with oxygen. Once you limit the amount of oxygen and become intolerant to CO2, it changes your personality. You become a very fearful person. And now imagine the prototypical human with a mask on, lordosis or kyphosis, with no diaphragmic mobility. And
so at that point, you're just like breathing into your chest because you can't like get into your diaphragm to express that.
Exactly. And then you're increasing slowly, just increasing the amount of CO2 in the system, which leads to panic.
I was
going to
say, so you're almost like mildly panic breathing all the time.
All the time. That way you get into these altercations or you start looking at the internet or like scrolling or doom scrolling and you're like, what we're saying has like very deep implications for society. If you don't control your tissue, the end result, although it seems dramatic and people might think that I'm being extreme when I say this, is if people that don't learn to control their tissue don't control their state. If they don't control their state, they don't control their reaction to confrontation or their reaction to stress. Therefore, they can't ameliorate it and they can't correctly respond. They react to everything. And so when you look at society, a society bent on, you know, a society built on tissue that is uncontrolled, all I see is a lot of other things that cascade down that way. Whenever you're dealing with somebody with bad body position, kind of in the back of my head after like learning how connected these things are, all I can see is somebody that probably can't control their state very well. Therefore, if you have dealings with them, you're seeing an emotional kind of roller coaster. And that might seem extreme, but that is what we're talking about when we're talking about training. When I'm saying, hey, you should fix that, you know, hip issue. The reason being is like, if you are not centered, you spin, right? Like, this has always driven me crazy about politics, about people who admit that they lean one way or to the other, you know, left or right. I don't care. You're unbalanced. You're not centered. There is something very obvious about human nature that needs to be very centered in its physical and mental and emotional position in order to express itself correctly. I don't know where you want to go with that.
Yeah,
I thought I would dive off left.
I'm going to back up to posture a bit because I think people also misunderstand that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you alluded to it, but the way I understand posture is it's your body's response to gravity.
Yeah.
So your body goes path of least resistance, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't have, if you're not strong, and I don't mean strong like powerlifter, mm-hmm. I just mean like as a human being.
Hold your tissues. Yeah.
If you're muscle tissue doesn't have the ability to hold, mm-hmm. then your body starts doing all this weird shit because gravity's not like, I'll take a break today. So people go like, pull your shoulders back. And you're like, how long can you walk around all day trying to contract your back so you have the idea of good posture?
Yeah.
But that posture's still there.
Yeah.
Because the second you don't have the active thought about pulling your shoulders back, which posture isn't an active thought. It's your body responding
to gravity.
To gravity. Yeah. So, you know, you go down the rabbit hole of like what muscles are weak, serratus anterior, joints don't, like, sure. But like if you don't find ways to work on those things or you don't have the musculature to do so, you're just going to keep fucking kind of like rounding over until you're like the person that looks at their shoes while they walk down the street.
Do you know how I think about it? Because it is a good point. When I mean like center, that is exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's like the pull of the earth.
Yep.
I think about it like the pull of a grave. the more you let your shoulders meet the ground, the more likely you are to be decrepit and unable to get off of the ground. Like, mortality starts pulling at you at a young age.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, like all of the positions that reinforce the position of going back fetal into the ground are all the kind of same behaviors that do that to you. Life in a cubicle, life at a desk, life looking at your phone, sitting on the couch, being inactive. The reason why movement can be considered medicinal is because it corrects for that pull to the grave. You're actively fighting that and counteracting it with an efficiency to stay upright. And when people say, oh, have good posture, you're right. Like for 2 seconds I sit up straight and I'm like using the only muscles that I know how to control, which usually aren't the ones that need control.
Yeah.
Right. Those ones.
Yeah. There's no core musculature. Yeah. There's no trunk, anything. It's
exactly.
Just, and essentially, and you see people do it, they pull their shoulders back, which generally means lumbar curves. So now they're walking around like in their back essentially. Cause they're like, I got good posture. Like you'll see it in girls with high heels on.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like their back looks like a fucking bow.
Yeah.
And they're like, but my ass looks great. And you're like, yeah, but you're not gonna be able to sit or stand in 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. Cause you've altered the center of your pelvic tilt.
Yeah. Your center of mass has now changed based on your fucking shoes.
Yeah. And then you add to that fake tits, fake ass. And now I have amplified the draw of gravity around my spine structure. And so lips can get pretty heavy, I think.
I have come to understand training now through this conversation as something that must be done to prevent the shitty quality of life that the life everybody's leading is going to lead them to.
100%.
And I had never thought about it like that until right now. Because I've always trained.
Yeah.
So I've never really like thought about what it was doing for me based on what we're not getting because we don't do active lives. Because I would consider myself active.
For sure.
But not active in the sense of like, we're going to go till the field today.
No.
And things that you just do normally back when working land or like life wasn't honestly this easy.
Think about your disposition. I think about this often whenever you get hurt.
Yeah.
How fucking depressed you are.
Yeah. I mean, you just saw me go through it.
Yeah, exactly. With the calf thing.
Yeah.
But back, like my back goes out or like something happens or even something so stupid. I like jammed my foot because I have this jiu-jitsu problem, but like my ankle is real loose now from getting like foot locked all the fucking time.
Fucking Jamie.
I know that. Actually, he's pretty good. He just chokes the fuck out of me. But
oh, all right.
But he's not a foot guy, but there's lots of people that are just like slam and then they, you know, it's a sprain. It's like it's fairly easy to deal with. But my foot is kind of weird and sometimes it jams and I almost can't step on it until I don't know what's happening. I think the talus is moving up and it's just like sticking. You know when you like jam your thumb and you're like, ah! And then you like pop it and you're like, oh God, fuck, holy shit. I don't know how to describe it because I'm not inside of it, but that's the best way I can put it. Well, it happens to my foot and I can't walk on it. And when it happens, it'll only last a couple hours, but in those hours, I imagine I'm like a peg leg and my whole world starts collapsing.
Yeah.
And I start doing the math like, okay, I can't hike anywhere anymore. I can't like jump. I can't step up. I'm going to be like, holy fuck, this is like a disaster. And seeing that, I think that's why, you know, people are like, oh, I'm just not motivated to go to the gym. You're like, just like think about the grave.
Yeah.
That's it. I think about.
Did you have a mindset shift? And I noticed this when I tore my calf because I've been hurt a bunch.
Yeah.
And like when you're in your 20s and even my early 30s when I got hurt, it was kind of like, I want to say almost a point of pride.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, I'm working hard enough. Like it'll come back.
Yeah.
And then when I got hurt.
Shift.
Yeah. It was end of October. I think it was beginning of November when my calf tore. And I was like, oh, like I felt like fragile, which I don't like, obviously. Yeah. And then B, it was like, oh, this is like the implications of it were different. Like it was like, man, like responsibilities to walk my dog. Can't really do that. Like I'm in an apartment on the third floor. That's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. fuck no shit.
Like, you know, I want to be able to hike and run this summer. And I was like, fuck, like, am I going to be the dude that's like, oh, you're 40 and tore your calf. My leg was never the same or shit like that.
And then think about Think about how doctors treat you when you come in with like an injury. They're like, just don't do that thing anymore. Like, right. How did you hurt your shoulder? You're like, well, you know, I was playing baseball. I guess those days are over. And yeah. You're like, what people think about biology is that like what it's fixed. But actually the reason biology is different than inanimate light or inanimate objects is because it has a feature of adaptation.
Yeah.
Now you can push, like we know with natural and unnatural forced selection, is that we can change the behavior of biology if we apply the right pressures. And this is training. Almost anybody who is quote unquote training, to me, when I look at it, is actually not training. They're exacerbating either think qualities that they already have or damage or like further damaging the thing that they're doing. I had this conversation today at the jiu-jitsu gym. Obviously, like, you know, people started bitching about their shoulders and I've injured my shoulders quite a bit, but my shoulders are like fucking resilient. And I think it's only because like I see your state when you're like, I don't know if I'm going to get it back. I have fought that idea.
Yeah.
Every injury, I'm like, I'm getting, when I shattered my elbow, it was like, nothing is going to fucking stop me. Doctor told me I'd never to be able to do push-ups again, legitimately. He's like, that arm will never work again. He's like, at least I didn't have to lop it off because I had what they, you know, I guess they there's a special term for it, but the only thing that I had hanging on was the radial arm. Everything else was torn. MCL, fucking radial break in 27 places. And they're like, we were close to needing to amputate it, except the radial arm was, the radial head was fine. So they left it. But when I asked him, I was like, well, when will I be able to snatch? He's like, no. And in my head, I went, I can do it. Like, biology adapts, right? You see dogs that get their legs chopped off.
They don't give a shit.
Dude, they're the next day, they're like, ball? And they just like kind of like figure it out. Yeah, like
this doesn't feel the same, but whatever, yeah. I'm going after a ball.
Dude, day after amputation, they're fucking great. They just don't let their emotional consequence get in the way of how they adapt. And I think one of the benefits of being human is we have access to a conscious emotional state, which allows us to express it differently than an animal can. The downside of that is that it overlays a severe and added problem onto every insult.
Yeah.
And that an injury is not just an injury, it's a call to mortality.
Yeah.
And so dogs don't know anything, or animals generally don't like have predictive future experiences.
Yeah, and then I'll go like, oh man, if I had this leg, I would then. They right. just go like, cool, I'm doing this thing.
They just adapt.
And they don't like consciously think, I only got one leg.
Yeah.
Right? They're just like, oh cool, I move like this now.
So if we can, and this isn't to remove the emotion, it's to process the emotional thing and get to the part where we're back to, okay, how does biology respond? Okay, it responds through training. And the reason why I was originally attracted to FRC is because they started talking about training from the very clean example of, this is how biology works. You need these, tissue responds to these stimuli in this order. And then the recovery is this order. And if you do it correctly, you can shift your biology to adapt to anything that you need it to. There's really no such thing as not getting your mobility back, which I think a large subset of the population is under the impression that once they lose it, it's gone. And it's a sad societal problem, which is like, they have fundamentally given up on the fact that they are one of the most adaptable living things on the planet.
Well, that's like our gift and our curse, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we can adapt biology in a very positive way, or we can sit at home and eat seed oils and chew on Impossible Burgers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll go like, we're fine, air quotes.
So what is the difference? This is a key. This is the secret to training. And I keep saying, spoiler alert, that when you get to the end, this is the answer. What is the difference between a biological adaptation for good and biological adaptation for poor?
I'm not sure.
It's awareness.
Oh,
it's
yeah, yeah.
always
yeah, yeah.
If you're more aware, this is like whatever religion you become a part of, this is what they teach. Right? Eastern religion, 5,000 years old. What's at the center of it? Be more aware. Everything else doesn't matter. The more aware you are, the more conscious you are, the more you can control your environment and control your reaction to your environment. Therefore, biology pressures become You want to get better? People, I don't have time. Yeah, cool. You don't have time to become aware of the problem so that you can fix it and not suffer the consequences of that problem. But no matter what it is, torn hamstring, broken bones, concussion, TBI, the answer is awareness to help solve the problem or insult of what that damage is. Now, can you fix it 100%? Not generally. This comes back to the idea that came out in the like late 60s, 70s of called radical responsibility. Everything is your responsibility. Anything that happens to you, I don't care if it's an accident, I don't care if somebody did it to you, it's your fault. That, some people call it Jewish guilt, but but in essence, it's kind of a, it's a feature of responsibility about looking at any scenario. So I'm driving, this is, people, well, what if I was driving and somebody came out and hit me? You should have been aware that driving to that place, you needed to pay more attention about your surroundings. Now, yeah, there's stuff that you just can't be aware of. That's part of it. But the fact that most people, when they drive, basically go into a trance state and think because they're in a metal box that they're totally safe and they're jamming out to their favorite fucking Kesha soundtrack or whatever. But the problem becomes awareness. And so when people say, ah, my shoulder's fucked, I can't do anything about it. And you're like, you are just lazy. And I don't mean physically lazy, I mean mentally lazy. FRC also, why was appealing to me, because most of the exercises that they do are not, they're not patterns that you're supposed to repeat. They are, it's time and expression that you're spending time into to increase the amount of awareness that you have in that position. That's fundamental, I think, to training. I wish it wasn't so boring for people, because now when I do cars, it becomes more and more fascinating. Oh, I can feel that now. It's like becoming more aware. You're like, oh my God, I never realized that tree over there. Or I never realized that that person was like that when they were in this state. And so awareness becomes this, like, I don't know, self-fulfilling gift that it, once you become more aware, you can't help but become more aware. That is kind of, in essence, why training for us leads back to the philosophical. Like, it's a physical expression in and then a psychological expression out.
I was gonna say, man, the first part of becoming aware is very painful.
What I'll put it this way. What you know those videos, these are really popular when YouTube first came up, when somebody's sleeping in a car and then they slam on the brakes and everybody screams, right? And that person wakes up and they go, ah, and they're like freaking out. This is what I think about when people are like, oh, you just gotta wake up. Do you know how freaked out people are when they become aware of how dangerous the world is? About how unsafe the, like, it, this is, most people do not want to be aware. They don't. It's painful.
And I think the way society's set up, not that we need to get into this conversation, but like, you're almost like so busy, and I'm not saying like a useful busy, but like the world seems very busy. Mm-hmm. Like, go from here to there, you know, everybody's got to commute a certain distance, so nobody has, and I'm not like giving an excuse, but the time to become aware is becoming increasingly more difficult.
I think this maps on top of my criticism of technology. I wouldn't say that I was a Luddite, but I kind of am. In the fact that nothing has ever changed with human nature probably in 200,000 years, right?
Like, yeah.
That is our species. Therefore, we have all of the kind of same dispositions. We just map on top of that different cultural pressures and conditioning. But those conditioning, we might think that it's different. We think of ourselves as cultured and civilized, but they're the same pressures. They're fear. That is the easiest way to kind of like get people back into a condition or control,
right,
especially in large subsets of people. So therefore, the pressures have always been kind of the same for us. We just deal with it different ways. Now, instead of like, you know, how we might go about sitting around a fire and singing Kumbaya in our small groups of 150, in order to deal with the fact that we have groups of unknown thousands that we have to deal with. The unknown is very terrifying to us. We have to kind of like forget the fact that a human that doesn't know us, like, I think about it this way. Maybe there's a better way to put it. We're supposed to be super against Russia. right? Russians are Cold War.
Down with USSR.
Red Fear. Yeah, but in reality, like the average Russian person, take away the political implications of it, does not give a fuck about what's happening here. And the average American does not give a fuck what's going on over there.
I would argue the average American doesn't give a fuck what's happening here.
Fair. And yes, because unless it's happening to them.
Right.
And that's why COVID was such a awareness shock. And when people woke up about what was going on, what did they do? They freaked out like they were in a car getting woken up for the first time. And it wasn't pleasant for everybody to wake up. Oh, God, fucking world's on fire. And you're like, yeah, now it matters. But the people who were aware were just like, welcome to the fucking party. Like,
yeah,
the world's dangerous and you could die and we're all going to have to fucking deal with it. But if you were a fairly conscious person, COVID did nothing to you. It really didn't. And that's not to diminish the fact that it was a deadly disease that killed people or anything like that. It has to do with the pressures of society, like up all this uproar where people were like banding together in masses to like, you know, yell at something about people with masks, yell at somebody without masks, yell about the vaccine. All that had to do with were people that were just coming awake and they were trying to figure out their circumstances. And when we come online and we become awake, we're very like, we're sympathetic.
Yeah.
You remember Charlie?
That sounds familiar.
Charlie was here for the symposium. He's like a young kid, just finished college.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Super smart fucking kid.
Yeah, yeah.
He sent me this thing, a text that he thought, I think, I should just look it up. This is going to be great. I'm going to put Charlie on blast. Sorry, Charlie. Not sorry.
We'll find out if he listens to this podcast.
Oh, he 100% does, because I think he feeds me stuff just like that. So he fed me this thing. He's like, oh, I thought you'd appreciate this. It's weird to think that nighttime is the natural state of the universe and daytime is only caused by a nearby radiating ball of flame. And I said, oh yeah, that's like, you know, how high are you right now? But also, I was like, I'll add on to that. How about that our sleep and being unconscious is our actual natural state, and that being awake and aware took billions of years and trillions of iterations, and we are still likely just in the panic state, like when you wake up when somebody slams the brakes.
You sent that to me like a week or two ago, and, yeah. And I think you were like, I hope you're high, good luck. And I wasn't, I needed it. Yeah.
So the fact that when you think about how long our natural state is being in the dark, like look at cells or, you know, single cell organisms, you think they're awake? No, the natural state of life is actually to be unconscious. Consciousness is something very, very new, and we're not amplifying it, at least in mass generations, because it's very hard to control people that are very aware of what's going on. That's it. That's like the basis for kind of all control. We need to like keep this thing going. So don't wake everybody up, because once people start going, I want this out of life, and it's not in the direction of, you know, a few politicians or a few world leaders or what moneymakers or however you want to describe it, cabal of evil pedophiles. Doesn't really matter. You lose control. This is what I'm going to take back. I'll draw this line. You can agree with me or disagree with me. Controlling your body to the degree that we're talking about allows you to become aware of the control and not control that other people have over you.
I think I agree with that.
This is fundamentally why jiu-jitsu has been so mind-blowing. Well, jiu-jitsu is fun. It's fun to roll around with kids and fucking wrestle your buddy and like...
Yeah, you big sweaty guys all over me. I love it.
It's a tussle. And it's like, you know, it's a paying tribute to like being a kid, to be honest.
And I mean, I think it is like part of our human nature we've forgotten about.
Actually, the episode that will come out before this with Daniel Strauss, the Raspberry Ape, he's the most fucking beautiful example of what jiu-jitsu can do to somebody. He talks about it when I go, oh, did you pick a style for jiu-jitsu? He goes, no, man. I feel like I'm just doing what humans have always done. We've always just fucking wrestled with each other. And he's like, I just get in there and got into the... And jiu-jitsu is just what we call it, but it's grappling. It's like you know, it's judo, it's sambo. It's every culture has had some form of man-to-man adversity where you express this thing. And sometimes it's deadly, and sometimes it's a game, and sometimes it's a sport, and sometimes it's access into philosophy. And in my path in jiu-jitsu, although I think it would be awesome to be a world champion, I'm not like that gifted. It would be cool. Don't get me wrong. I think that is the lowest expression of jiu-jitsu that you could possibly do, is winning. That is fucking basic bitch shit when I look at what it can do for when you realize, if I can control myself in the worst situation possible, i.e. somebody is going to kill me, right? We're taking this metaphor to the extreme. They are strangling me. The lights are going out, but I'm as calm as a cucumber, because I accepted my fate and I'm enjoying it.
And you're not waking up at that moment.
No.
I've
already woken up. And this is what you get with white belts who freak the fuck out when they're getting strangled. It's like you're spending your last moments on earth freaking the fuck out. It's a waste of energy. Take it and reflect on how much you like this thing and then let the lights go out. That is the only way to pass. It's the only answer. And that is what you practice in jiu-jitsu, is smiling while the lights go out, because you've enjoyed your stay here and you've controlled what you can control. And now you're saying, fuck, somebody got the better of me, or life got the better of me. And you know what? Good on you. And then you walk out of it. Or you're humbled because somebody lets go of the choke and you go, oh, I get another opportunity? Fuck yeah. What are you going to do with that opportunity? Usually it takes a massive scare of cancer, a life-threatening accident, loved ones dying, to be able to get this reflection. And instead, I do that every day when I drive to the gym 20 minutes and I spend some time with my friends, slap hands, and then we like choke each other for a minute. And I leave and I go, okay, what else can I do because my friend let me live today?
Oh, interesting. I did not know you thought about it. Like, I mean, that makes sense, but I didn't know you like were actively thinking about that all the time.
Every day. All day long.
I want to circle back to COVID and the people waking up in that moment. And I think when like you have such an abrupt kind of like, you know, even tying it back into like the positions and the breathing, like that pandemic all became about like, what can other people do to make sure I'm safe?
Yeah.
When at least in this building and other people I know across the world, we're doing like, what can I do so I can be safe?
Yes.
Is possible. Exercise, yeah. Eat better, sleep, pay attention, be aware. Like, yeah, we all had our issues at first. It was like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And you know, the fear mongering was pretty heavy.
Strong.
So you're like, cool. Like if I go to Target to get steaks, I never went to Target to get steaks. If I went to Whole Foods to get steaks, sure. I didn't want to, but I'll put a mask on because why not?
You never know.
I don't want to bring it back to the people I care about.
Yeah.
But also at some point we're all like, we're all pretty fucking healthy.
Yeah.
Like I think we'll be just fine. And then we all got it at different times. And you're like, yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, it was awful.
I never thought I was going to die.
No.
I didn't like that I was laying on my couch and I couldn't even think.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, I was like, I'm not dying. This just sucks.
Yeah.
And cool, I'll get past this. And then
when people come to training, then usually they're like with a coach because they think the coach is going to fix their problem for you. But what a coach is there to do is to pay attention where you can't pay attention yet, where you're unable to pay attention, and poke at those things, literally, sometimes physically poke. This is my biggest criticism of Mike Istriel. He's a phenomenal thinker. But I think, and it might be an excuse that he said when, and he might have been talking about something specific because of how it was geared, but he goes, it's so stupid to think that to be a good coach, you have to physically touch somebody. And that has always bothered me. I think he was referencing it like a handsy coach with like a female being like creepy.
Yeah.
But I took that as like, you are discounting the absolute importance of human touch, connection, and trust. And also, you've never actually coached somebody. If you don't know that like poking their lat turns it on, like it gets them to feel it. And FRC also touches on this, like the partner pale and rail, some of the only way that have gotten people to feel the sensations that they need to increase their capacity in their joint capsule is to like poke them and hold their joint there and have them push against me in a very like hands-on way, or the spinal segmentation where you like use your fingers and now their vertebrae are segmenting properly. Yeah. That has always driven me crazy because it like it comes back to this idea that training is somehow like zeros and ones, and all it is a feature of telling somebody that how many exercises they need to do for how much time, and that is somehow a good result. That, and I think we're pretty, as beating on like a horse that's probably been beat down. People come here because they don't even know how to start paying attention to what we're talking about. And it, the faster we can get them to pay attention, the faster they can get their friends to pay attention. Maybe we should make an MLM out of it. I don't know. But the fact is that when you recognize that it really has to do with awareness, that coaching is just simply a matter of awareness, it really drives you crazy when somebody's coaching a class and they're staring at their phone the whole time, or they're not paying attention to the people that are paying them good money to pay attention to them.
Where do we go with that?
It's a deep one.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't really like when people speak, and I'm sure I've done this and maybe I've backpedaled on it or not, I don't know. But when people go like, this is bad, that's dumb, don't do this. Like, at least in terms of coaching, like, cueing stupid. No, it's not. You're just not doing it correctly. Mm-hmm. Touching somebody's inappropriate. No, it's not. You're doing it incorrectly. Yeah, yeah. Like, if you have a coach and you're like, ooh, I don't want them to touch me, you probably should get a new coach.
Yes.
And like, sure, like, I'm not going to be like, here's your glutes and palm somebody's ass.
Yeah.
I'd probably do that to a guy.
You know, I really want you to breathe in and feel that, feel your taint retract.
Yeah, let me tickle it so you know where it's at. Like, there's certain body parts people know exactly where they are.
You come to jiu-jitsu, I'll check your oil for sure.
Well, it's just part of the game. That's just boys being boys. But, you know, like, if you got to, like, grab somebody's lat, and yeah, obviously there's people in the world that have gone through some things that maybe you need to understand as a coach, like, hey, I'm training somebody that's been recently or in the past sexually assaulted. Like, yeah, maybe you need to navigate that situation appropriately, which is also awareness and which is also coaching.
Yeah.
And there's like a, hey, I want you to know where your lats are. Do you mind if I poke them or touch them? If you don't want me to touch you, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, there's always another step.
Yes.
There's always something you can do if you're aware of what that person's going through to be able to help them facilitate doing things correctly.
And I would argue on that very, like, probably rare but extreme example that when you build trust with a client and you go, okay, hey, is it okay if I, you know, poke your rhomboids or your mid back or your, you know, I'm going to put my fingers on your vertebrae so that you can feel where to push and palpate. That is the very start of somebody becoming very aware of their physical structure, and how that ends up being later, hopefully, is a more autonomous person that then wouldn't put themselves in the situation where they could be taken advantage of or abused.
Yeah.
Because they're gaining control over their own physical structure, which in some cases allows you to defend that at a very good rate. Strong people are very hard to fucking deal with. You know what? Like, I don't worry about Erin because she will fucking kill somebody. If you touch her and she doesn't want you to touch, you're going to get essentially a 140-pound cat at you. Like, she is, I've scared her, and how she reacts, I will not do that anymore. She is not somebody to fuck with. And to be fair, like, that's an attainable level of strength, attainable level of physicality that I think all females and males need to apply. When a male doesn't know how to tolerate somebody else being physically oppressive to them, it's the biggest sign that they weren't taught correctly.
Yeah.
All right, that went...
I thought it went well.
Okay.
I really enjoyed that conversation.
Fitness was fucked. We'll end there because I think we're right at an hour, so that'll be perfect.
All right, sweet.
We'll pick this up. Mouth noises, episode whatever.
Yeah, probably 8, maybe 9, could be 10.
Yeah, right on. Mouth noises.
Cheers.
Cheers.